This is the Pete Brindley Show podcast with news and comment for the first week of April. Baseball is back, so we have to ask, what's your favorite baseball movie? A fascinating story from a teacher who was handed off. And a review of the new movie, Chappaquiddick. First up, an interesting story this week from a woman from Martha's Vineyard. Leah Bassett is suing a man she rented her home to, saying that he allowed the house to be used to shoot a multitude of scenes for pornographic movies. And those scenes prominently featured her personal artwork in the background. Bassett is a longtime resident from the Aquinas section of the island. She has sued Joshua Spafford, saying that the man leased her home under false pretenses. She's also suing the production company. With baseball underway, let's look back at baseball movies. I wrote a piece for the Standard Times a few years ago naming the top 10, and it seems that everybody agreed they just had them in a different order. Here are five good ones. The order is up to you.
Someday when people look at me, they'll say, there goes Roy Hobbs, the best there ever was.
Robert Redford in The Natural. Still one of the best theme songs of all time, I think. Gina Davis and Tom Hanks in A League of Their Own.
Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
The movie that a lot of people selected as their number one.
If you feel what, who will come?
Insane.
I hate it when that happens.
Me too.
This game, it's a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good.
Hey, is this heaven?
No. Iowa.
Ah, Field of Dreams.
Can I always tell when I'm in here?
Yo, Chapo! Yo, son! Yo,
clear the mechanism.
Kevin Costner again for the love of the game.
Hey, Willie Mays Hayes here. Play like Mays? And I run like Hayes. How you doing?
Of course, Major League, the classic.
What the hell league you been playing in?
California Penal.
I discovered a new author recently, and I'm busy reading the Martha's Vineyard Mysteries of Philip R. Craig. I learned a lot about him on his website. I edited it a bit here due to space and time. Philip R. Craig was born in 1933 in Santa Monica, California, where he was raised on a small cattle ranch in southwest Colorado near Durango. Until he was 9 or 10, the Craig family ranch had no electricity or running water, but the house was full of books. He started writing in high school. In 1951, he went to Boston University with the intention of becoming a minister. But before graduating in 1957, he had become more interested in literature and writing than in philosophy and religion. In December of 1957, he married Shirley Jane Prada of Edgartown, whom he met while in college. During summers on the vineyard during the 1960s, he covered the island matters as a stringer for the New Bedford Standard Times. From 1962 until 1965, he taught English and journalism at Endicott Junior College in Beverly. In the fall of 1965, Phil joined the faculty at Wheelock College in Boston, where he continued to teach English. Phil remained at Wheelock until the spring of 1999. When he retired as Professor Emeritus of English and also became a full-time writer. Best known to many as a novelist, Phil wrote his first novel during his noon lunch breaks in the back room of Al's Package Store in Edgartown, where he worked summers. It was published in 1969 when he was 35. His second was published in 1989 when he was 55. During the 20 years between appearances in print, he wrote and submitted novels that he says no one wanted to publish. Phil and Shirley retired to their summer home in Edgartown, where he would sail his catboat, surf cast for bluefish, cook, sing in the island community chorus, garden, and engage in other island activities. Most mornings, he would write. Philip R. Craig passed away on May 8, 2007, after a brief battle with cancer. So far, I've enjoyed A Deadly Vineyard Holiday, Shoot on the Vineyard, and Vineyard Shadows. I think there's at least 19 more to go. My wife Priscilla and I went to see the movie Chappaquiddick recently. A few people asked me my opinion, so here we go.
Oh my God, what have I done?
The hell happened, Teddy?
It was an accident.
Tell the truth. Or at least our version.
I've been diagnosed with a concussion.
I haven't examined the patient yet.
These theatrics are not going to hold up in a court of law.
We liked it. Priscilla and I both agreed it's maybe a 3 out of 5 stars. It's not amazing like a Star Wars type movie, but it was good. The movie focuses on the car crash and the week that followed it, ending with Kennedy's live televised speech to the voters. Now, I don't think I have any spoilers here since we all know the story. It doesn't sugarcoat anything. It shows how the senator should have reported the accident but didn't. Why? Well, we will never know. But it shows a very conflicted man. I was surprised to see how Kennedy's father, Joe, treated him. I know Joe was a very demanding man, but I couldn't help but say, wow, as we watched how he responded to his son that weekend. I was not surprised to see how the Kennedy handlers went into full damage control in those days after. In an article at NBCNews.com, we learned that Taylor Allen co-wrote the screenplay along with Andrew Logan. They say they assembled the account from the testimony at an inquest 6 months later, as well as Kennedy's memoirs and a book of letters from Kopechne. I had wondered about that because in a few cases, the only people who actually know what was said are now dead. Director John Curran admits that he was a lifelong Kennedy supporter, but he realized he had to confront his hero's biggest failing. In the article, Curran said, "I appreciate his greater legacy, but this is part of it." The Kopechne family is happy with the movie, as they say it finally shows what a wonderful person Mary Jo was and how horrible it was that her life ended that night. Jason Clarke plays Ted Kennedy and does a wonderful job. I think he does not, overdo it with that famous accent. Bruce Dern is the stroke-affected Joe Kennedy. Kate Mara is Mary Jo Kopechne. One other note, the audience was mostly my age, 56 and older, maybe 60s. Two of my children don't even know what it's about. And Priscilla wonders if the Kennedy mystique will end with our generation. Long-awaited Toy Story 4 has a confirmed release date. According to the official Toy Story page on Facebook, you can mark your calendars for June 21st, 2019, as our favorite cowboy Woody and Space Ranger Buzz Lightyear make their return, bringing with them a lot of their favorite faces. They will be searching to reunite Woody with Bo Peep. Priscilla and I have tried to stay busy this early spring or late winter with the Great Bakery Tour. We try to visit a different bakery each week. So far, we've been to The Baker in downtown New Bedford, which was okay, but the parking was horrible. Last week, it was Lydia's Bakery at 1668 Acushnet Avenue in New Bedford. We found a parking space at a meter right in front, and because it was a Saturday, we didn't have to pay. It was the Saturday before Easter, so people were coming in to pick up the bread and pastry that they'd ordered. Priscilla had a couple of sugar cookies that had been dipped in chocolate. I had a delicious chocolate cupcake. It had a nice frosting that wasn't overly sweet and some chocolate flakes. This week, we went to Cravings in Dartmouth. It's in the plaza across from Bishop Stang. I liked the atmosphere the minute I walked in, and their menu had a very good selection. I had a peanut butter cup cupcake. Yes, I do like my cupcakes. It was a chocolate cupcake with peanut butter frosting and a peanut butter cup on top. Priscilla had a chocolate cherry cupcake. I think Cravings was my favorite so far. Now, the interesting thing is I'm heading to Virginia Beach soon, and I Googled it. There are 19 bakeries in the city of Virginia Beach. My son Doug said he was up for the challenge. Here's that story I mentioned earlier from a teacher who's had enough. It was a post I put on Facebook earlier this week, and quite a few people responded to it and shared it. Let me see if I can read this to you. It's from a teacher in Texas. She says, "I left work early today after an incident with a parent left me unable emotionally to continue for the day. I have already made the decision to leave teaching at the end of this year, and today I don't know if I will make it even that long. Parents have become far too disrespectful, and their children are even worse. Administration always seems to err on the side of keeping the parent happy, which leaves me with no way to do the job I was hired to do, teach kids. Now, she included a couple of photos of the destruction in her classroom, and she says, "This is how my classroom regularly looks after my students spend all day there. Keep in mind that many of the items damaged or destroyed by my students are my personal possessions, or I purchased myself because I have no classroom budget. I have finally had enough of this disregard for personal and school property, and am drawing a line in the sand on a myriad of behaviors that I am through tolerating. Unfortunately, one parent today thought it was wrong of me to hold her son accountable for his behavior and decided to very rudely tell me so in front of her son." Report cards come out later this week, and I have nearly half of my students failing due to multiple missing assignments. Now I can look forward to spend my entire week next week fielding calls and emails from irate parents wanting to know why I failed their kid. My administrator will demand an explanation of why I let so many fail without giving them support, even though I've done practically everything short of doing the work for them. And behavior in my class will deteriorate even more. I am expecting this because it is what has happened at the end of every other term thus far. I have never heard of a profession where people put so much of their heart and soul into their job, taking time and resources from their home and family, and getting paid such an insulting, measly amount. Teachers are some of the most kind and giving people I have ever met, yet they get treated so disrespectfully from all sides. Most parents can't stand to spend more than a couple hours a day with their kid, but we spend 8 with yours and 140 others just like them. Is it too much to ask for a little common courtesy and civil conversation? It has been a dream of mine for as long as I can remember to have a classroom of my own. And now my heart is broken to have become so disillusioned in these short 2 years. This is almost all I hear from other teachers as well, as they are leaving the profession in droves. There is going to be a teacher crisis in this country before too many more years have passed, unless the abuse of teachers stops. People absolutely have to stop coddling and enabling their children. It's a problem that's going to spread throughout our society like wildfire. It's not fair to society, and more importantly, it's not fair to the children to teach them this is okay. It will not serve them toward a successful and happy life. That was from a teacher in Texas. And as I said, I posted it on my Facebook, got a number of shares, number of comments. And it's true. I mean, what does the future look like? Will there be a teaching crisis? Finally, this week, I'd like to end every blog with a little inspiration, a little thought for the day. There was a good one this week. It said, "Sometimes God closes doors because it's time to move forward. He knows you won't move unless your circumstances forced you. Trust the transition. God's got you." It's something I need to remind myself. That's it for the podcast for this week. Again, we'd love to hear your comments either right here on the page, or you can email braley.pete@gmail.com, or check us out on Twitter. It's @PeteBrayley or Facebook. Until next time, take care.